Okay, we're in the game of chess. The Madame Sesostris section is kind of one of the more memorable sections. And in a way, what it does is sets up the rest of the poem, at least setting up these references. And, I don't know to what degree Eliot had a superstructure for this poem. Some of it seems like it was almost added, after the fact, and with the kind of existential probing that you're doing here, you would almost not want to have some kind of too formal system set up. But it is set up around here, the tarot cards. And some are real tarot cards, like the Wheel and the Hanged Man, who is ironically a symbol of transformation, not death. Although here it seems to be associated with death. But the Drowned Phoenician Sailor is not really a card at all, but later we have Death by Water. But it is interesting that he's a Phoenician. Why do you think Eliot focused on Phoenicians?
He is a Phoenician.
They were the Middle Eastern people that lived in what is now Lebanon, who started the phonetic alphabet. So there might be some kind of relationship here to language itself, and what language can accomplish and what it can't. But anyway, we get into clairvoyant, as Eliot says, and he mentions all these cards, and again they're just kind of random cards, as if she were doing a reading and setting them out in order, and we don't know who's getting the reading, but we get mention of this Mrs. Equitone, and I'll bring the horoscope myself. One must be so careful these days. Well, this, is set as either the war period or the post-war period, and after the Russian Revolution, they had in this country as well as in Europe, kind of red scares that other countries would fall to communism. And so, papers would be, is that some kind of secret code, from the enemy is using. So I think that's why we have the reference there. I'll bring the horoscope myself. I won't mail it. But this is probably one of the most interesting lines, is where she says, fear death by water. And then I see crowds of people walking around in a ring, which seems to be a reference to Dante's Inferno and one of the fosses or ditch, the circles of hell, where these people are just kind of walking around in limbo. And for Eliot, that vision, that experience becomes reality or unreality in the next section. Another line that's going to reappear, or a strand that's going to reappear through the poem, and maybe that's a better way to think about this poem, is in term of strands as opposed to structure. But those were pearls that were his eyes. Anybody know what Shakespeare play that comes from? That's the Tempest. It's the song that Ariel sings to Miranda, I believe, about she sings to Antonio, who thinks that his son is dead, full fathom five. No, that sings to the son about the father, full fathom five, thy father lies. Those were pearls that were his eyes. So it's about transformation, and it's about something human becoming inhuman, something organic becoming something, a pearl-like, beautiful, artificial, yet artistic. So it's kind of a weird connection.
Where is the line, do I dare disturb the universe?
That's in Proof Rock. That's not in this poem. Let's hold off and start,
Do you want to?
Nah, I think we got enough space to get this in. All right, then we move from Madame Sesostris to this kind of almost a first-person vision, as close as we've got, in Eliot's voice, where he sees this unreal city. And we don't really know what the unreal city is, but, it's London, that under the brown fog of winter dawn, that things that seem solid and real, in this light, in this weird time seem almost like a dream, an apparition. And then he sees this crowd of people, and we've become almost accustomed to this image today of the faceless crowd, the crowd of so many. You know, how can all these people be around and exist? And what's the meaning of their existence? And here again, Eliot uses another reference to Dante, where Dante, when he reaches limbo, the outer part of hell, is first astonished that, you know, geez, I hadn't realized that death had undone so many people have died through history. And he's just amazed at the size of hell. But here you can see these people are kind of living life in death. And you can almost see something kind of Coleridgean in this, that these people aren't really alive. Each man fixed his eyes before his feet, float up the hill and down King William Street. You know, that sounds almost like Blake's London here. And then we've got St. Mary Woolnoth, the church is keeping the hours with a dead sound at the final stroke of nine. Instead of providing meaning, order, hope, the church is just tolling the mechanical hours. Then we go into something, again, kind of a surreal passage in which it's almost like two old soldiers from World War I are meeting, but here it becomes two old soldiers that are at once World War I vets, but also veterans of the ancient Greek wars. So Stetson is kind of, I guess, a modern name, but Miley is an ancient battle. The corpse you planted last year in your garden, has it begun to sprout? Will it bloom this year? So here's the burial of the dead, but that's the problem with the dead, is they won't stay dead. You know, we've got these cycles that we have to continually go through, historical, personal, cosmic. And the question is, why?
So is he talking about a corpse as in a dead body, or a corpse like past memories or past hurts or past pains that you're trying to keep buried in it? They keep.
That's a good point. I think it could be any, you know, because it's so surreal. I mean, it's an image, and, you know, or it's a symbol in Coleridge's sense that can mean many different things. But the last lines become kind of strange, because it's on the surface, there's this dialogue going on between Stetson and this I character. But then in the end, Eliot starts to quote a variety of sources, but this last line comes from Baudelaire. And this is where Eliot, you know, to me, just really pulls out all the stops, because what this means is you. I mean, whether this he's talking to Stetson or whether he's talking directly to us as reader, the line comes from Baudelaire, in which he says, "You hypocrite reader, my semblable, my copy, my twin, mon frère, my brother." How is the writer the brother or the twin of the reader? And how are we the twin, the brother of this poem? Or the speakers of this poem?
Maybe the brother or brother, what makes people brothers is they share a common past or something that they share in common. In this case, as the writer and as the reader, we share the poem, and that gives us that common background to make us family.
Yeah, but why are we hypocrite readers? What's hypocritical about us?
Whether or not we're reading this for pleasure or for something to talk about in society.
Or whether or not we're gaining anything. He obviously gained something by writing this, but we're hypocrites if we just read it and don't apply any of it or don't grow from it or anything like that.
Well, and I think what he's saying, yeah, whether we grow or not, I think what Eliot's saying, you guys are dead on, is that if you think you're not involved with the same issues and at war with the same problems, you're a hypocrite. You know, if you think you're somehow immune to the situation. And so it's just a great way to end this whole Burial of the Dead sequence, where we've had, you know, all these different voices, these situations, and then to bring it back home again to us as readers and the poem, which we're trying to understand.